Hi, and welcome to the Drone It Group podcast, where we talk all things drones, from news and reviews to business advice and regulations within the industry. Join myself, Lee Castledine, and EDP.
Hi, guys. In this podcast, we talk with Dean Chisholm of Bird's Eye Media about his adventures flying drones in Antarctica, his pathway in starting his drone business, and some tips for anyone wanting to start their own commercial drone venture. Enjoy. But like I
say, man. Story to tell, and involves probably one of the best trips ever as a drone operator. That is going to Antarctica, so he's got a few stories to tell. First of all, though, we've got the Mavic 2s are out, so you can pre-order them at the moment and get your hands on one of those little nice little machines to start flying. So yeah, use it, pay.
Mavic 2, that's what they're out and about. There's some people have been lucky enough to get their hot little peepers on them already.
I know.
And all three of us, we're here just talking about how we're spewing, we haven't been able to get one yet, but you happen to order one through Droner, and you are happy to either lay-by with us or take the interest-free that Zip Pay offer as well. So that's pretty cool. So
yeah,
if you're pretty
guys.
Keen to get your hand on a Mavic 2 like we are, then get involved with that one. And then perhaps maybe you could start flying that Mavic 2 around all different crazy places around the world, much like Dean has in Antarctica, of all places. Dean, thanks a lot for talking to us over there in WA. We know it's a little bit early over there for you, our West Coast cousins, but the coffee's over there is good. I've been there, so I know there's no excuses.
He's got his coffee.
I do.
For those, Dean was sporting a nice little beard that sort of was a bit like, Game of Thrones style sort of
beard.
It was a massive Ranger beard, by the way, very much the colour of this radio and colour of his bird, of the logo of his business. But thanks for joining us, mate. As I said, we know it's early over in Perth, but before we get to the really fun part of your recent experience to Antarctica, I just want to sort of, first of all, ask the question how you got involved. It's a question I get asked a lot, how you actually first got involved in drones.
Yeah, well, I suppose I started out, I was actually working in signage when it came about, and it took a life event for me to realise what I truly wanted to do. So I probably spent about 14 years in sales and marketing, and just working in front of a computer doing the daily grind as you do, but thinking that was my dream. But it took a major life event, like my father got ill and passed away really suddenly. So it makes you kind of reassess everything in life and realize what's important. And out of that, I really looked at my own life and what are the things, if I could wake up every day and love exactly what I'm doing, that's what I looked at. And I looked at all my passions and came down to photography, videography. You put a few things in a blender, and drones came out of that as well. And I know it was early stages, but that new technology came out, and I just thought, man, imagine working around drones. So what came out of that is I looked at getting my remote pilot license. And taking the dive. And back then it was study for sort of 2.5-3 months, and $4,500 later plus some. Now it's times have changed so much. But yeah, got my drone pilot license, and I was still kind of working my full-time job and then doing this on the side, and slowly building up the business until it came to a point where I needed to take that leap of faith and dive in. So I suppose my background was working in signage and sales and marketing. It helped me, especially with social media, with branding. We were always working with people's logos. So in terms of the business that I created, it's really all about branding and content creation for any business. So at first it started out as a drone company, but I soon realized that it would benefit to offer other services as well. So especially in the colder months, as you guys would know, it's pretty difficult to fly drones in the rain, and people generally just don't want cinematography from a drone in wintertime, because you know trees don't have leaves on them, videos look a little bit dull because of the clouds and so forth. So winter's always quiet, so it was important for me to find other aspects and build a business that could pick up the weight when the drone stuff was down. So thus, Bird's Eye Media is more a content creation company for any business. So, you know, and videography and now drones are a byproduct of the full sort of picture. So,
yeah, I've noticed your business change considerably when you first started out. You know, Bird's Eye Media was, you know, specifically flying drones. And as you said, you've had to evolve because I suppose the technology and also the market has dictated that you can't just be just a standalone drone operator these days. You have to have a lot of other skills sets to offer a potential client. And as you said, your history in sales and marketing, and also I'm looking at your website, mate, you've got everything there. Your graphic design, branding, social media management, 360 and VR, which I'm really excited to talk about, and obviously videography as well. So it's quite a wide range. And as you said, you're more in that space of, you know, content creation rather than just specific drone operations, aren't you?
Absolutely, yeah, and I think you need to be multi, you know, in terms of a company, the company needs to be multi-talented to be able to service a lot of needs. And I mean, our niche is content creation for, you know, for any business. And when it did start out being drones, it was very hard in the beginning, because as soon as, you know, laws came out like the sub 2kg rules, meaning drone operators with a drone under sub 2kg meant that they could commercially do work, it just absolutely drives a stake through you know, through a commercial operator who relies on that day-to-day business. So you have to look at other avenues to actually grow revenue and generate business. So but you know, and it does quickly weed out the amateurs from the professionals as well. So you can also look at it in a positive light and say, well, look, we have public liability. We operate under a UOC, and a client that would hire you for a project, then they're covered as well. So it's a little bit of an education process with the market at the moment as well. Because it is very saturated, and as you see with JB Hi-Fi and Officeworks, and everyone is selling drones now, so it's more important now than ever to really get your message across and your capabilities, I suppose.
I think one of the key things that I like what you said out of that, Dean, is that it was something you had going on the side. You didn't go all in from the start, because I've seen, and we've seen, a number of people that will go all in, buy the rigidige gear, have all the bells and whistles and the brightest, shiniest gear you could get. And what are they doing? Sitting at home, waiting for the phone to call. And that's the thing. They're waiting for the phone to call. They believe that because they've got all this stuff going, that it's going to come to them, and they don't bother to put in the hard work.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's one of those scenarios, you know, like people used to look at that saying, build it and they'll come, in the drone industry. It doesn't necessarily work like that. And there's a quote that we've got on our website basically saying, owning a drone doesn't make you a pilot.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of time and energy and learning that goes into becoming a pilot and an efficient pilot as well that can... they can capture exactly what the client needs. So, it's not that easy, unfortunately. So,
well, there's something aspirational about the industry. As you said, you know, you said that you were, you know, working, you know, in an office for 10, 15 years, and then have a bit of a life-changing moment where you decided you wanted to follow your passion. And a lot of people see this industry going, what a great industry. I'm flying a toy around, which is great. I'm outside, and each location is somewhere different, and I'm capturing, you know, amazing aerial images. And yes, it sounds like fun, and it is, but there's a lot of hard work, as you said, to become a really good, you know, sort of videographer in the air. If you want an aerial videographer or photographer in the air, essentially you are one. And then also, not only that, how to make that little hobby into a business. There's a lot of moving pieces to it. So, yeah.
There is, absolutely. And, you know, it's important to... Think about what's going to be your niche and your service offering. Like, we were at an expo yesterday talking about drones to people and workshops and so forth. But the amount of different areas that you can possibly go into, like one guy was saying, look, I built a device for my son to use for fishing. So, you know, there's areas which you can branch out. So drones is really a hub for people to be able to create software and and attachments and things for drones as well. So it's not just drones as the foundation. You can build on so many other things around drones to create an industry as well. So,
and when you got started, because a lot of people ask me how I got my, you know, how I build my clientele base up, and I basically did work for free for 6 months flying for nothing, and I didn't mind it because it built my skill base. I was in a position where I could do that. Not, I understand not a lot of people are, but how did you get started? Do you go immediately to your network of people and sort of branch out from there, or did you go target a specific industry within the drone, like whether it be, you know, quarries or sort of events, and sort of target that?
Well, I think I was fortunate because I did come from a sales and marketing background. I already had that on my side to be able to help promote and grow my own services. So essentially that part of my business was a little bit easier for me to be able to market and jump on the phone and sell my business, because I've already done it for so many years before. So, but you're right, I had to do exactly that, and you've got to kind of put your, tuck your pride away and tail between your legs and suck up a few free jobs so that you can build up a portfolio, because not everyone's going to pay for an amateur straight away. So sometimes it is as simple as just banging down some doors and door knocking and saying, hey, look, I think you've got a great business. Can I take some free shots? And at the same time, you get to build up your portfolio, and then they get some great shots. So there was absolutely an element of that in the beginning. So
how good would it have been when that moment where you said, mate, I can do this, I can go all in now, this is going to be my full-time thing?
Oh, and look, it was a scary moment, you know, because there's, in any business, there's uncertainty, but I would not look back for a second. When you follow your dreams and chase your dreams, it's far, far easier to have a little bit of uncertainty on your side than just continually working a job that you hate, you know, and you're just doing it just to get a paycheck and survive. So if I could do it again, I would in a heartbeat and have that uncertainty feeling again, because it's just, yeah, when you're truly doing what you love, it's true, you don't work a day in your life.
Yeah, the very good sort of things that you're saying there, Dean, and also it's taking that jump and that leap is such a big thing, but regardless of whether you fail or whether you're successful, you'll be glad that you will never go out with any regret. And that's probably the biggest thing, you know, the lesson that I've learned from deciding to go in, you know, all in. It wasn't never I'm going to buy a $20,000 drone, get my license, and then just tell everyone I'm ready to go. It was always just slowly, and the way that we've done it, you know, with Drone It is just grow organically, and the best selling point is your content. And if you're producing great content and you're keeping your clients happy with amazing imagery, whether it be through, you know, sort of aerial mapping or, you know, videography or photography, that speaks for us. That sells itself, doesn't it?
Oh, and it that just drives you to want to keep creating and keep excelling and keep reinvesting in equipment and gear and creating a better experience for the client. So, you know, when a client comes back to you and says, oh wow, I absolutely loved what you produced for me, like that, you know, the money's obviously it helps, but when the clients are absolutely wrapped like that, then it's it's a no-brainer, really.
Excellent. So
righto.
we've moved from managing signage, bad coffee in the morning in cubicles in the office, to eating a buffet of poo sandwiches, starting up the drone business. Next thing, you find yourself on the bow of a ship heading into the Southern Ocean down to Antarctica. Tell us a little bit about that. I'm intrigued. I've gone into this quite virgin-like. Lee done a bunch of research.
Before you you get going, Dean. I'm totally jealous, and two, I was trying everything in my power to get on this trip.
Yeah.
Because do you need a spotter? Do you need what do you need, man? What do you need? You need someone in there. You know, you need that second person. It's vital.
I'll hug you the whole time.
Long story short, Dean, Bird's Eye Media flies under Dronitz Riok. And there was a fair bit of work involved in trying. So I heard about this trip coming up, and I was doing everything I possibly can to get on it. But How did it all start? When you first got that call to the moment that you arrived, how did it all happen? And tell some stories.
Yeah, so it was a whirlwind, and so we got a call. I think it was just an inquiry from Google, from a man called Ray Petitri, who owns a broadcasting and documentary company called Blizzard Road Productions. So look, Ray was a fantastic guy, and he said, you know, he'd filmed documentaries all around the world, and we got the opportunity to film some drone footage for him at the new Crown Towers here in Perth. The footage, he said, was, you know, he's been around the world, he's filmed with a lot of pilots, and you know, we shone out, and we shined pretty bright when it came to the footage, and he said it was outstanding, and he'd love to introduce us to some of the other producers back at his firm in Dalkeith there. So one of them was Breege Whitehead of White Spark Pictures. So I was explaining to Breege, you know, when I met these producers, that, you know, my visions for the future, and it was to fly heavy lifter drones like the Matrix 600 Pro, and attach 360 cameras like the Insta 360 Pro attached to it, and produce some virtual reality 360 degree content in Western Australia, because I love Western Australia so much, to the point where I want to create content around encouraging people to come and spend time in Western Australia and boost the tourism industry here. So she heard that, and obviously parked it for a while, and about 6 months went by and I didn't hear anything, and I was just sitting at home, and I got a random phone call from, it was a London number. I was like, oh, that's a bit odd, I'll answer it anyway. Normally any number like that, I would just sort of hang up. But she said, hey, Dean, it's Breege here. Not sure if you remember me, but I'm just sitting here with the guys at National Geographic and the BBC, and just wondering, one, have you got a passport? And two, do you want to go to Antarctica?
And three, do you need a second person?
I took about half a second and said, that would be unreal. So from that point till December, it was a whirlwind. So I was straight on the phone to Lee, obviously flying under, you know, Dronitz UOC over the past few years. I said, logistically, geez, Lee, what do we have to do? And then that's where, you know, Alicia and Lee stepped in to help me look at all the paperwork, the logistics, what did we need to do, talking to the Australian Antarctic Division and their CASA representatives and stuff. And the biggest challenge going into that was the environmental impact assessments, because anything that you do in Antarctica, you're judged very heavily. A drone, if it does go into the water, and even if the water's 4 kilometres deep, you've got to retrieve that drone. Nothing can be left in the water. So
really,
you know, there are a lot of huge environmental issues. There's a lot of air traffic going around in Antarctica, especially they use helicopters as a form of taxi, and sling loading equipment from base to base. So logistically, it was a big project to take on, and you know, Lee, it was fantastic getting your help, and we did try and get you on board a couple of times, because you know, from a drone operator's perspective, having a heavy lifter like that, and the equipment that we needed to attach to it, I saw it as a two-man operation. And the team that I went over with, Breege Whitehead, and who was the director and producer, and Phil Harper, he's a BAFTA award-winning director from London, works for the BBC, filmed the 360 degree reef, the Great Barrier Reef documentary with David Attenborough. So that was our crew. So we had 200 kgs worth of gear between the three of us. So you can imagine my fear when they had to go off and film their little their scenes, and then I was left with the other gear to myself. So definitely it would have been nice to have an extra pair of hands, but logistically it was impossible. But so that's how it came about before heading over to Antarctica.
What sort of drone did you end up using over there? It was obviously a pretty heavy lifter, and what sort of gear did you have to put on to make this whole sort of, you know, VR experience work, or this 360 degree experience work?
In Perth we have a drone supplier that we like teaming up with, and we get our drone service through them as well. So Frank at Altfish Robotics, he was a great hand. So we got two Matrix 600 Pros. One of them was just sitting in a box, completely unopened, just for if a drone did go down, we needed to have backup. So we had a custom 360 degree gimbal mounted to the bottom, which was a WinPod Tarzan A. And then we attached a Insta 360 Pro, which is a 360 degree camera that can film in 10K. And it can also film in stereoscopic and 3D as well. So just gives the user a really immersive experience. So other things that we had to do as well, we had to mount a high-res GoPro to the front to give me my FPV camera. And then we also had to mount another GoPro to the top of the drone, looking straight up to capture the sky. So obviously when you're hanging something below a drone and you're filming in 360 degrees, when you look up in a VR headset, you're gonna see the drone. So we needed to be able to patch out the drone. So that's why we got the footage looking straight up. So all of that gear, there was a lot of cords and cables and HDMI cables and linking and setup. So it was a pretty big setup, and we did a lot of testing as well. Probably the hardest thing for us was because the camera hangs so low below the actual landing gear, we needed to come up with a way that the drone we could take off and land. And all in all, we built all these PVC pipe construction methods and how we're going to get that over to Antarctica, because you don't really know what you've got access to when you get over there. And you've obviously traveling around from, you know, in Hercules and helicopters and all that sort of stuff, you're very limited by what you can carry. But in the end, what we ended up using was a couple of fish crates supplied to the guys on stations for each of the skids on the landing gear to sit on. So that's what we had to launch from and land on, even in the middle of the ocean on boats. That was our kit. So a lot of testing in cold storage facilities. So the lead up to it was pretty crazy.
Yeah, you don't have any margin for error when you're down there, do you? You need to do all your testing and tick all the boxes, and then once you trust the process once you're down there. So, I mean, was there any sort of moments where you thought, hang on a sec, I'm in a little bit of trouble here? Or was there any sort of interesting little stories that or did everything run as smoothly as...
It couldn't have.
It couldn't have, surely.
In terms of smoothness, we did a lot of testing and a lot of preparing for the experience, but nothing will prepare you for actually landing on that ice for the first time, and what you need to do in terms of the cold, the gear. Like, you just so sometimes when you're going to Bali for a weekend, you're like, oh, what am I packing my suitcase? But when you're going to Antarctica, it's thinking what you have to take is a daunting task. So actually getting there, probably the hardest thing for us was carrying the amount of gear around that we had between three people.
Yeah.
So if you're filming a documentary, you need as much gear as possible, lights, tripods, and we're talking tripods that can withstand, you know, a lot of bashing around, and the same with cameras and gear, and especially two Matrix 600 Pros, they're all boxed up, they're not really small items. And we had three 360 cameras with us as well. So in terms of gear, that was probably logistically the hardest thing for us. But in terms of funny stories, probably the the one that's the most memorable for me is we were, so we were in the middle of the ocean, about to film a scene overlooking the Sawsdall Glacier, which is right next to the Davis research Station. And we'd just finished a sequence and we had to land the drone in some pretty choppy water. We had to land it on the front of an IRB boat. And so there was myself and Marty, who was a field safety officer, and we were just about to land it, and then a penguin jumped up and then jumped into the center of the boat. And,
no way. Pesky
environmentally,
penguins.
You can't touch penguins, or you're meant to stay, you know, quite far away from them. So this penguin, we're like, buddy, the battery's going down. We need to, you need to get off. Shoot. So trying to get him to scamp. It was pretty hard to get him off the boat. So it was a pretty funny moment, and it was all caught on camera as well from the other people in the other boats around us. So penguin animals is probably the highlight of the things that upset the filming structure and process, I suppose, like birds flying in the way, or elephant seals, you know, like waddling past us, or penguins jumping into a scene when they probably shouldn't have. So, but it all makes for such an immersive experience as well, and it makes it real. So, in terms of logistically and planning wise, everything went off without a hitch. We had the most fantastic weather while we were over there. So even though it was summer, it was still minus 10, but in the whole scheme of things, you know, we didn't have blizzards and crazy snowstorms. And apparently we had the best weather they'd had all year. So we were very lucky.
How long are you there for, all up?
We were there for about 2.5 weeks. So we spent a bit of time in Tasmania doing a bit of training and doing a bit of filming at the Australian Antarctic Division prior to that, and just getting our gear and stuff like that. So all up, at the whole trip was a bit just over 3 weeks.
Wow. Jeez.
So, like, I guess there's a few things that went wrong, but you seem to channel the inner MacGyver when the chips were down there. I'm surprised, as well as the beard, you didn't grow a bit of a mullet there, Dean. Just to channel in there.
Well, I was actually clean shaven when I went to Antarctica, and I thought, well, I may as well just grow it out. There's no point in shaving and looking good, because everyone looks pretty rugged over in Antarctica anyway. And, let it grow out for a couple of weeks, and then it was my post Antarctic face warmer, so I kind of you grow attached to it a little bit. And I always said to myself, I'll shave it off as soon as the premiere comes out for the Antarctica experience. So and which I did a week later. So that's why I'm looking like a 12-year-old boy at the moment.
Tell us a little bit about that. So you've shot back in December, and obviously you hand over the content, and you know yourself that you shot some really good stuff, and then all of a sudden the premiere comes along, and so you're in your tie, you know, walking down the red carpet, and you tell me the feeling that you're going through, sort of when you're about to watch, you know, I suppose this documentary on Antarctica, and then finally seeing your footage play out, you know, with the crowd.
Oh, it's surreal, and my heart definitely skipped a beat from, there's a scene in the, I won't give away too much in the documentary, because it will be going around museums around the country and around the world as well, so people will be able to go and watch it for themselves in high res. But there's a scene where we are flying over the Sawsdall Glacier, and it reveals itself, and it's just such a stunning, beautiful scene. And what they actually do is we took a lot of 2D photos, and they stitched that over the top of the 3D footage to make it so real in 3D and make you feel like you're there, and it takes your breath away. It's stunning, and for people who haven't been to Antarctica, it truly does make you feel like you are there. So that moment for me, my heart definitely skipped a beat, and it's a pretty proud moment. You know, for myself, and when they're doing speeches, but Breege actually shared a behind the scenes documentary that they're going to be using to help promote the Antarctica experience as well. And it was funny, because I was only the really one getting behind the scenes footage and just doing video logs and not really thinking too much of it, but that actually formed the foundation of the majority of the behind-the-scenes documentary.
There you go. You're a drone operator as well as behind the scenes, so videographer.
Seeing that and seeing yourself video logging in Antarctica, it's so surreal. And you know, we are now the world's first drone operators to have been granted access to fly commercially in Antarctica. So that alone is a pretty big feather to put in our cap. And you know, just seeing the footage that we were able to capture and assist in filming, it's a pretty proud moment. And you know, like it's kind of set the stage now for us knowing that one, we can deliver those types of experiences. And wanting to bring that home to Australia as well, and
absolutely
producing the same sort of things to help raise tourism awareness in Australia and capturing 360 content here. So there's a lot of byproducts of that as well.
Yeah, and I think you're right. Like in the past, we've always seen a lot of aerial footage of Australia, you know, whether it be taken via drone or by helicopter or plane, but your experience that you're trying to promote is more of a virtual reality type, you know, put a pair of goggles on and really, you know, get immersed in the, you know, the aerial videography, the footage that you're capturing. And that's probably something that's a little bit different from, you know, all the other stuff. You know, we've always seen helicopters fly over the Great Barrier Reef and capture great footage, but to put a set of goggles on and experience that way is something a little bit different, isn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And hey, Andy, I just thought of one other story for things going wrong. We were filming a helicopter scene we had the Insta360 Pro hanging out the side of a helicopter, which we weren't allowed to engineer anything to attach to the helicopter. So we had a monopole sticking out the front window, and we'd done tests for about 2 days. To make sure it all worked, but what we didn't account for was that helicopters go about 400 k's an hour when they're in the air, and the camera kind of we had safety chains making sure it was attached to the pole, but it was so fast for the gimbal that we had attached to it that it just was flopping around, and we had to land mid flight on a little group of islands and right next to the glacier and get the duct tape out and redo that scene. So you can plan as much as possible, but it just still doesn't account for things that you totally don't expect.
Nothing accounts more for having a roll of duct tape.
I was saying never underestimate the value.
That was the most important,
a roll of duct
tape. And
NASA, it's part of the NASA any inventory on any mission. A mission to Mars is definitely going to be duct tape on that one for sure.
Oh man, and that I definitely had to channel my inner MacGyver for that one as well. So, yeah,
I could have just imagined you now, like 400k an hour, just going, we didn't see this one coming. But yeah, I know what it's.
One thing I was missing was the chewing gum, but that would have come in handy as well. But
well, yeah, definitely.
Mate, it's been a pleasure. You know, we've learned a lot this podcast, and I hope everyone listening has as well. Not only from a business point of view, how Dean yourself got started with Bird's Eye Media, and I suppose the challenges and that you've sort of had along the way to where you are now, and then also share with us that really, you know, amazing experience Antarctica. And I think probably the biggest lesson I've learned from this is you never know when your next big gig is going to come from. And as you said, I was really intrigued as to how you got onto that trip, and it just came from a phone call, and probably what came out of that was the great content that you produced that person referred you to the big wigs to get you onto that trip. So it's because of amazing content that'll always speak for itself, and then obviously with sound business sense that you've got, you know, with your own business, I think that in itself all formed a pretty good reason as to why you got on that plane trip. So mate, congratulations on that.
Thank you. We've run out
of time, but it's been a pleasure talking to you, and thanks for sharing all of your information with us. Hopefully a lot of people who are starting out in the drone industry can take a little bit out of what Dean said and you know, he's as he said, his challenges as to how he got started and where he is now. And we're just trying to promote the fact that it can be done. It's a lot of hard work.
It's hard work. That's one of the key things that I think Dean's come across to us. It's hard work. You can't just sit down and expect it to come to you. You got to go out there and fail. And also, when you get the win, make the most of it by Absolutely. All means. And always and bring duct tape.
Don't forget the duct tape.
Mate.
And look, if it's a passion, chase it. Do
yeah, that's right.
You can
exactly
chase
right.
Chase that down because, you know, you'll definitely not have any regrets if you do follow your passions as well.
And what we'll do, we'll throw up on our social media some images, Dean, that you took along the way. And also, yep. I've just been on the museum, the Antarctic Experience, and there's a nice little 40-second intro there as well. We might share on our Facebook as well, just to get people teased. Is it coming out to Queensland? Because you know, or is it going around Australia? This whole thing.
Yeah. So there's a little bit of uncertainty as to where it's going to go first or who's going to get rights to it. But basically, so the WA Maritime Museum have got the first rights to it with like Screens West and Lottery West.
Yep.
So it's based here in WA, and then I think it's going to go to Canberra first, and then from there it might be distributed out to all of the museums around the country. The logistical challenge there is there's 90 VR headsets in a theatre that need to be transported or yeah. purchased to be able to watch the event. So logistically, I'm not sure what museums are going to jump on board, but eventually it will go around the world to all museums. Right. And then someone, you know, like hopefully like Nat Geo or BBC or someone like that will end up buying the footage and putting it into an iPhone or an Android app for anyone to be able to watch from the comfort of their own home.
Right. No, we look forward to watching it, mate. I'll try and sneak down to Canberra and sneak in with one of the pollies there and to watch it, mate. But again, thanks heaps for taking the time out, Dean, of your day. I know you're a busy man, so much appreciated. For those guys who have been listening, for everyone out there, we'll be putting up a fair bit of information on Dean's trip and everything like that. So, and if you need any work over in WA, Bird's Eye Media is the team to
yes,
help execute it. So,
definitely.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, mate.
All right, cool. Thanks, mate. Cheers. All right, just a few things from us, guys. This was the Facebook Live. We hope you could hear it. We haven't done a Skype call coast to coast before, but we got this one going. Hopefully, there's a few more coming. Also, out of this, we'll also have a nice podcast ready for you guys within the next few days where all the audio will be great to hear, and you can hear it while you're stuck in a traffic jam somewhere or chilling out on the beach. So that'll be perfect, and thinking of Antarctica while you're at it. All right, so, Dean, thanks very, very much, mate. Have yourself another coffee. The West is the best. Take it easy over there. We can't wait to go over the West Coast and catch up with you sometime. Lee, it's always a pleasure. I think it's time for us to have another coffee. And to everyone else out there, have a good day, and we'll talk to you very soon.
Thanks, guys.
You have just listened to another Droner Group podcast, and we thank you so much for listening. Make sure to like and subscribe so you don't miss out on any of our upcoming chats, and make sure to join us on Facebook and Instagram. Can we go back?